ocean, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing.
Well, at this point, I'm supposed to jump in there and be bright and cheery and radio DJ. But I gotta tell you, I know I'm supposed to be bright and cheery, but man, is there a lot of stuff going on. This morning, I went down, get the crew started at the Fort Myers Boat Show. We've got a big booth there. We're right under the bridge, the Cleveland Bridge there, you know, going south into Fort Myers. We're right underneath the bridge. Vinny's down there. Rick's down there. Terry's down there. She's there to make sure they're not all goofing off. Carl's down there. We got guy from Savage Lures is down there. Big deals on Savage. We've got a lot of closeout stuff down there this year. A lot of Akuma, some the Daiwa. Got a lot of... You found a batch of old red bones we didn't know we had. Took those down there. We got all kinds of stuff down there this year at the Fort Myers Boat Show. It is the real boat show on the west coast of Florida. It's not a bunch of boats in a parking lot. You know, it is literally like a mile long. It's amazing. There's literally dozens and dozens of different vendors and boats, from rowboats up to multi-million dollar yachts. Pretty much anything you can think of. It's absolutely astounding. And then I had to stop by the Fort Myers store down there in Ingman Marine Dealership. So I get down, sorry about that, stopped the Fort Myers store, fixed a couple problems there, and then headed up to the Port Charlotte store, and we've got the inside, we're still in the throes of the remodel. The store's twice as big, so we still got stuff we're moving around. And outside, we're building a seminar area. And this thing's awesome.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Robert's here, the old blind tarpon himself, and we got RJ in the control booth over there. All three of us here, and we're going to get into the fishing. But wait till you see the seminar area we're building. This thing is cool.
Just all of it as a whole is pretty impressive.
Yeah, everybody's coming in. I mean, snowbirds are stopping by. And they're not even ready to go. They're still working on their houses and stuff. But you said they're stopping in just to see?
Yeah, they're anxious because they've been reading it on the fishing reports, hearing it on this radio show, and just excited to come in and check out the changes that have been going on. So they're not to shop yet because they're not ready with their homes. They're just opening them up, taking their storm shutters down and getting it cleaned up from being closed up for the last several months, but they still
are just
anxious to
by.
Check it out and see it.
And I had another guy today doing a twirl in there because he had so much room. I'm like, this is embarrassing. There's too much room here. You can actually walk around unobstructed. All right, let's see. Cold front, obviously.
Yeah, it looks like a fine autumn day for up north.
God, this is like being in Wisconsin in October. It really is.
It's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Now, wait a minute. There ain't enough. The wind today could blow you away. And you think this is nice?
No, I'm pretty thin. If I turn sideways, it doesn't affect me.
Oh, is that what it is? You put one of those spoiler things on your hat so you can just hug the ground.
That's right, yeah.
All right, the question before the court is, if you have a day like today, which makes the biggest difference, the cold air temperature, the wind, or the cloud cover? Which one of those would make the most difference in dropping the water temperature?
D, all three.
Okay, pick one, though. Which is the one you think would be the biggest? RJ?
Well, I want him to pick first.
Okay.
I'm going to go with wind.
Wind. All right. Yep. You think the wind is going to do it?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I would have guessed cloud cover.
See, I was going to go with the cloud cover. I mean, we know Robert's right, all three of them combined. But if you've got cool air temperature and wind, it really does help cool the water down. But if you have that on a bright, sunny day, you don't get the temperature drop. because the solar radiation penetrates into the water, still cooks the water up. Even though it's being moved around, it's still not going to get as cool.
I'll disagree.
So you think the cold air temperature and
I think it depends on the amount of wind. Like, the amount of wind that we have right now with this front is actually going to put lower tide out there. So it's going to expose more dirt, which will cool the dirt down. So as the water starts to come up, it'll actually cool the water down more so.
It sounds like he's doing a dirt diggler trick here. Well, of that, you know, all right, okay, I'll go with more dirt out, which would be shallower water, so that would go. It truly is a combination of all three. But without the cloud cover, like you were talking about, RJ, you don't get those dramatic water temperature drops. It would take days and days of cool weather, you know, cold air temperatures and wind to get the same effect that you could get in one day with cold air temperatures, wind, and cloud cover.
Well, I'll give you my black crowbar story. I put a black crowbar on the driveway, and it was cool out. It was in the 50s, and a little bit of a breeze, but a bright sunny day. And at the end of the day, I go to pick the crowbar up, and I burn my fingers.
Okay, so
and that was just solar radiation on a black piece of metal that was able to hold the temperature. And so I think I'm going to go with Frank on that one. I usually go with Robert just so I can be anti-Frank, but I'd go with Robert on most of the stuff. But in this case, I think if you get rid of the solar radiation, you get a dramatic drop in temperature.
Yeah, and there is a lot of truth to that, but you know, like Frank says, it really is a combination of all three. But the funniest part is that people feel the cold air, and they automatically assume that the water temperature just drops as drastically as the air temperature does. You know, and you know, 2 weeks ago when we had that cold front, everyone was coming in wanting crappie minnows or asking where the trout were at or the sheep's head were at. And it's like the harbor temperature was still in the low to mid 80s water temperature wise, even though the air temperature was whatever, 60 that night and 80 that day. It was nice, it was comfortable for us, but you can't take, you know, a 32 ounce cup with hot coffee in it and throw one ice cube in it and expect it to do something.
Right.
And just because the temperature drops for one night, it doesn't change the water temperature drastically enough to really get a lot of those species.
It's 5-1. You got one day of cool air, but it takes 5 days to get the water to drop.
Correct. You know, and especially
I think you see that in the morning too when there's no wind, especially in the canals. You start seeing the steam coming off the canals.
Absolutely.
The water is just so much warmer than the air.
Look at it this way. Pensacola, the water temp up there is 63 degrees. In St. Pete, it's 78.4, and Naples is 80.6 as of yesterday or early today. Now, by the end of today, we should see a few degrees cooler because all the cloud cover, we got a big Arctic wind blowing, we got nice cool air temperatures. It's actually awesome out there. Now, this should bring in the king mackerel. And one of the reasons we talk about air temp and all that, what I love about it is we got the Gulf of Mexico going on, and it's going to take a lot longer for the Gulf temps to drop. We'll get a couple degrees out of it, but the harbor will drop a lot quicker. And then the canals are going to be a little bit warmer. They're not going to get the cool breeze. The houses protect the canals from the wind. It's going to rely on air temp. So you're going to have a lot of fish moving up into the canals. I love this time of year because I don't have to travel all the way down to Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, or the Intercoastal to find fish.
Well,
got
like
all
that,
the fish up here on the river, the Myakka, the east side, west side. We got tons of fish up here.
Well, and you don't have to travel very far to be protected from the weather. You don't have to say that, well, it's blowing too hard today, so I'm not going fishing, because there's plenty of areas to go to where you can stay out of the wind.
Well, you got the Myakka cutoff, but the only thing about that is it's really, really shallow when the wind blows out of the east or the north. But you got the east side, west side. You can still play around. You can get outside of Hog Island. Anything going on up there around the mouth of the Myakka and the Myakka River area?
Yeah, it's actually been starting to pick up pretty good. The Myakka cutoff has got a lot of snook in it. quite a few trout. You know, the weird thing has been the amount of trout that have been around everywhere. I mean, they shouldn't be normal.
I'm going to say that you're wrong. This November is the prime, historically, not over the last 5 years, but prior to this, November was the biggest trout month. They actually closed trout in November, trying to get people to take less for a few years.
The key word was, though.
Was. Now, I guess it maybe not, but if you go back over the last 30 years, November was the month we were supposed to have the most trout.
Right, and I'll agree with that, but whatever the changes are in with the fish, you know, usually for the
last... I didn't mean to stump you. I wasn't trying to do that. I'm just pointing out historical facts.
No, you do that every time. My That's memory, a normal thing to stump
My memory
everybody.
Goes beyond my last Facebook post. You know,
right.
My memory, I'm like an old elephant. It just keeps going on and on and on. Just wish I had the trunk. Okay.
This morning, going up... Well, we got zinged on that one.
Right.
Just wish I had the trunk.
Dun-dun-dun. Okay, go ahead.
Going over the 776 bridge there on the Myakka River at Elcho Bean, there were several schools working to the south side of the bridge. It was a little choppy, but they were just boiling away. And I have no idea what it was because I was doing 55 miles an hour, Officer Ortiz, going over the bridge. But there was definitely fish working just south of the bridge.
Okay, one of three possibilities. Normally, up there you're going to have... There is out there, I would say, what day were we out, Robert? Monday. We went out in the boat Monday, mostly as a sightseeing tour. Had his mom, his sister, my wife came, Robert's girlfriend was there. We had, you know, a whole boat full. And we're just kind of cruising out. We went down, had lunch at Cabbage Key, went out through Captiva, came back up. They went shelling up on... We looked for that one part of Cayo Costa where it didn't look like anybody had been up there with a boat. And it was too far to walk from the other ends. Mm-hmm. And they found some really cool stuff up there on the... Some skeletons and a few different cool shells and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there was some pretty neat stuff there.
It was pretty cool out there. And then when we were coming in through Boat Grand Pass, as soon as we hit the intercoastal, the biggest school of ladyfish I've ever seen in my life. I would say well over a mile long.
Wow.
And a quarter, half a mile wide.
Yeah, but it was pretty impressive. It's one of biggest schools I've ever seen, if not the biggest.
As far as I could see to the north, as far as I could see to the south, and then ahead of us, hundreds of yards. And there was just fish blowing up everywhere. It was spectacular. Had a lure on. I had the Rapala ripstop on. And literally, if you just threw it out and reeled it back kind of quick, you caught a fish every second cast. It wasn't every cast, but it probably could have been. But it was not any more than every two casts. And these were nice ladyfish.
They were big ladyfish.
20-inch plus ladyfish.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest I've ever seen in the harbor. And just the most massive school. We went on past that coming home, and there were schools of jacks. I saw two different schools of jacks blow up. Got down a little further, and right by Cape Hayes, I'm almost positive there were Spanish mackerel there. I couldn't prove it because I didn't stop to actually catch one, but just from the way they were hitting the surface... I don't think it was ladyfish again. I think it was Spanish. So three different schooling fish right there as just between Boca Raton Pass and Cape Hayes. And literally, I would have to say hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of ladyfish.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive amount of fish.
I've never, literally in all my life, I've never seen school that big. And up where you are, I'm going to boil it down to one or two. Because the Myakka River is really not flowing. The Peace River is at 3.5, about 500 cubic feet per second. Not a lot of water coming down. A little bit, but we need 800 to protect us, 800 cubic feet per second to protect us from red tide. But up there, I'm going to guess it was ladyfish or jacks.
Yeah.
I don't think the Spanish should go up by the bridge that far.
My first guess would have been jacks. Because they were really blowing up on the surface. You know, just quick look sideways as you're going over the bridge.
Now, is it on the north side of the bridge or
south side of the bridge?
South side. Well, you could have Spanish, jacks, or ladyfish there. Any one of the three.
Or fourth option then would be mullet.
Third?
Well, you
third
threw,
and a half.
You threw in the Spanish mackerel.
Well,
and threw me
if they were on the north side of the bridge, river side of the bridge, it's doubtful the Spanish would go past the trestle.
Right. And I haven't heard of enough Spanish in the upper end of the harbor, so I'd be skeptical on that. I'd stick with the jacks or the ladyfish, but with the amount of schools of mullet that have been around, too, and being prefrontal conditions, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a big school of mullet being pushed through there, maybe being chased by
some
jacks.
I've been in a prefrontal position all day, so, you know, I get that. But I don't think it had been mullet, not because they were blowing up,
yeah, they
right?
were blowing up, yeah. It was big stuff going on the surface, and you know, some of the blow-ups could have been 10-15 yards long.
Yeah,
because they were real easy to spot as I was going over the bridge.
If it was mullet, you'd see that massive shaking of the water and stuff, but I don't think you'd see the blow-ups
unless something was chasing them. You know, like I said, tarpon, jacks could have been going after
all right,
them and
well,
causing them.
Where are the tarpon right now? You really think there's tarpon up there?
Yeah, there's been tarpon around. I mean, the juveniles are almost always there at El Jobin. But I've been hearing some phenomenal fishing of tarpon in the 20-foot holes and out in the pass. I mean, our one customer came in today. He actually broke his rod high-sticking a fish that he was trying to get up next to the boat. He was out in the 20-foot hole and had a double hookup twice. And then and nobody fishing around him. He said there wasn't a soul fishing for them at all. Had the whole 20-foot hole all to himself chasing those fish. And then I've had other guys out in the past that have been doing fairly well. You know, the biggest thing is right now is that they're catching them on those ladyfish more than anything else. Some of the guys are trolling along with some of the bait busters or drifting along with bait busters and doing fair. But the ladyfish have been definitely the key to those tarpon. And then up by your house, Frank, there's been some guys seeing tarpon from the 75 bridge moving up past up to the water treatment plant. And some of them are getting confused with some of the gar that are cruising through there, but the tarpon are definitely in that getting ready or already in their wintertime spots that they want to be, and they're doing fairly good.
How are they rigging the ladyfish?
Honestly, most of them are just freelining them and drifting or using their trolling motors. It's always nice if you have a couple of them out. I like to freeline one, and I like to put one under a float, and the one under the float goes out the farthest away from the boat, so there's a less likely chance of them finding each other and tangling up your lines. But I always like to have one freeline so he can just move up and down in the water column.
No, I don't know. I am Murphy's redheaded, illegitimate stepson's firstborn child, and I can tell you, with my luck, they always find each other, and they're always tangled.
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot. There's no question about it. You know, and usually most of the time you're nose-hooking them, just kind of between the eyes and the nostrils in that hard cartilage part. And then I don't personally care if they're alive or dead. Some people really prefer them to be alive. But I've done pretty good on both ways, so I'm not going to necessarily go out there and run all over the harbor.
Do you think that's going to hold true this year with all the red tide and the dead? We were seeing times this spring where they would not hit a dead bait. Maybe under a bobber is like a zombie bait, where the bobber's bouncing it around, making it look like it's still alive. But I don't think tarpon are going to throw, if you just throw a dead ladyfish, I don't think you're going to get one. I think they're going to shy away from that dead bait right now. I think it's still too soon.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to go out and actually try it and experiment with it to argue it or not argue it.
Well,
you know, there really hasn't been a fish kill anywhere around for 2 months now, a month and a half.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the fish are over that, and, you know, they have the attention span of a gnat, so.
Okay, well, I'll go along with that. They're like social media people.
Pretty much.
Yeah. You got one post, oh, yeah, this is bright and sunny. Next post, oh, it's getting dark out. Next post, it's getting sunny out. Well, I don't know. Somebody just said it was dark out. Well, nope, you're right. It's sunny out. God, they can't keep up.
And what about lures for tarpon at this time of year, especially for those of us that don't like to get our hands slimy on a dead ladyfish?
Live ladyfish.
No, dead ones.
All right.
I, I'm personally probably going to throw, like, the Z-Man, the big white Z-Man that's, like, a fluke-looking one. It's, like, 10 inches or 12 inches. Or the Hoagie are going to be my two favorite ones because they're going to simulate a ladyfish. If not, my personal favorite is going to be the DOA Bait Buster or a big 6-inch Storm Wild Eyes Swim Bait just because they're...
So the bigger the better.
Well, they're the kind of tried and true and just always consistent. Versus, like, the Hoagie or that Z-Man is not always consistent. Even though that's what they feed on and it emulates them the most, it doesn't always seem to work as consistently as the others.
Now, I'll go along with the Z-Man, but I don't like the big jig head thing. A lot of guys are throwing them with that big 2-ounce jig head. I think maybe if I was fishing the holes in the harbor and I wanted to try for... gag grouper, a Goliath grouper, and a tarpon, I'd put those big jig heads on there. But other than that, I'd probably rig it with a weighted worm hook and slow down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've never used those big jig heads on them. The way I rig them up is actually using one of those ballyhoo hooks by Owner. It's that long shank hook.
Right.
That one I just like to just run it through, you know, because it's about... I guess it's about 3.5-4 inches long of a shank, and it's like a 10-aught or an 11-aught hook. It's not giant, but it's pretty good size. And I'll just let it go out there because that bait's so heavy, it slowly sinks down into the water column anyway. And honestly, most of the worm hooks that are out there that are made for those, I don't feel comfortable enough with them with their strength.
Oh, I don't know. We got a couple up there. They're pretty good. We got the Owner Beast hooks, and they're big and bad, and we've got a few from different brands. We've got a nice weighted hook. I don't know if it'd be good for much more than a 60-pound tarpon from Strike King. It's got a belly weight on it with a little willow blade. It's actually pretty cool.
And the one DOA makes isn't too bad either. You know, I've thought about it, but, I mean, I'm going to stick with what I know that's made me feel the most confident.
All right, comfort zones.
Yeah.
We were talking about a lot of trout out there, and we're hearing about trout down in Pine Island Sound, Matt Lachey, Two Pines, the east
Lemon
side of the
Bay.
Harbor, the west side of the harbor, Lemon Bay's got trout. RJ, would you change the color of your lure or just use a completely different lure or the same lure if you have a real cloudy day like this versus a sunny day?
I have found on cloudy overcast days for me, anything white works really well. I'm not sure why that is. Again, it's the concept that white's picking up all the other colors in the area, you know, so it's not really white when you see it underwater. And on bright sunny days, I don't have much luck with a white lure. So.
All right. Robert?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be afraid to experiment. I mean, I don't know if...
Are you kidding? Wait a minute. Mister, don't change anything. And I feel more comfortable with these because I use them all the time and they're tried and true. And now you're not afraid to experiment?
Right. I mean, trout.
Is he messing with me?
All the time.
Okay. Well, as long as we know where we're
at.
Frank.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, trout are one of those, how do I put it, stupid fish. About the only way I can put it, because I mean, they'll eat just about anything if it wiggles and flashes, it seems like. But there are times where they can't.
I can honestly say it's worked with me over the years, that wiggle and flashing. I've actually, you know, well, they hold the flashlight, turn it on and off. Yeah.
I thought it was the black light.
Yeah. Turn the black light on and off.
And you guys know this because.
The thing is that trout. Sometimes you can fine-tune it to pick the specific size fish by changing your colors. You'll find that a little bit larger fish is more tuned into this color or that style of bait.
Now,
I'm
going to go kind of with you on that because of purple. The
purple,
color
yes.
Purple, and it kind of fits right in with the black lights. But would you take purple and go fishing? Let's say you were going to use a black and silver lure and you were going to catch... 15 fish. You're probably going to catch maybe 8 with the purple, but they're going to be noticeably bigger. For some reason or other, the bigger fish will key in on purple. You're going to catch less fish than you would with, say, the chartreuse and white or the white and black or the, whatever the other natural colors would be. But you put the purple on, I get a few less fish, but they're bigger size, bigger fish, noticeably bigger than what the people catching with those other lures are.
I'll agree with you on that because I see that a lot with people.
You're saying that, you know, the bigger fish may be keyed in on a different type of color.
Right.
I'm trying to reinforce you here, buddy. I'm trying to, you know, add to your thing here.
Perfect. So where do we go from here with that?
I have no idea. Well, I was just throwing it purple. You were on the thought. You're supposed to remember where you were.
No, you agreed with me, so now that just totally threw me for a loop. Okay. Because that hardly ever happens. I got to mark it on the calendar. Yeah.
Spanish mackerel and kings. We got Spanish mackerel a bit in the harbor, not thick. Better numbers down right around Cape Hayes and that area. I think we're going to start seeing them coming up in the harbor. Maybe, maybe not. We're going to see what this cold front does. But in the near Gulf, you got a lot of Spanish mackerel. Now, if you're out fishing, RJ, we'll go to you first. Do you do something different fishing the Spanish in the harbor versus the Gulf?
Wow, I never thought of that. I would suppose that
the part B of the question is, would you rather troll for them or cast for them?
I think offshore you're trolling.
Okay.
Pretty much, because that's how you're going to find them. In the harbor, you can pretty much tell where they are because they're blowing up all over the place, and I'd be casting. That would be my guess. Not being the master fisherman that you are, but that's how I would approach it.
Thank you. You forgot my lord when you...
My lord and
yes,
master.
Yes, okay. All right. So, anyway, not to mess you up, but do you do something different for the Spanish in the harbor versus the Gulf?
Yeah, I think it just all has to do with the amount of area you have to cover.
All right. So what about the lures? Same lures versus one to the other?
No, I would probably use something bigger if I was trolling. So that you can see something from a greater distance underwater. The bigger it is, the further away you can see it.
All right, I'm not sure I'm going to agree with that. Robert, what do you think? Different lures in the Gulf than in the harbor? Spanish mackerel we're talking about.
No, I'm going to use the same thing.
Same stuff, you don't care.
Nope, I'm going to use the same stuff. It's either going to be a spoon or a gotcha jerk jigger.
All right, so now do you think trolling in both situations, casting, or combinations?
I'm honestly probably going to cast. I'm going to be running along and looking for either birds or bait fish or just the combination of the fish blitzing on the surface and going up to that area and just start fan casting through it. You know, I might troll from one spot to the next as I'm looking for those fish or birds or bait fish on the surface, but overall I prefer to actually look for the schools of mackerel kind of in a feeding frenzy and just like to cast right into them.
So you just want to run until you see something, stop and fish for it.
Correct.
Okay. RJ, you're more of a trolling?
I'm more trolling, yeah. Though I'd have to agree with Robert, when they're boiling up on the surface, you stop and you cast into it.
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those, I go trolling, and when I hit a fish, I'll just stop and fish. Yeah. I mean, I can keep trolling, but a lot of times I'm actually working away from the fish. So if I hit one while I'm trolling, I just start casting the lures.
I also think when you're fishing offshore, because you've got so much more water underneath you, you don't always see the schools on the top. It may be a lot more rare for the school to come to the top because they don't need to. Bait that they're attacking are going to be in those mid-ranges towards the bottom. So you tend not to see what's going on when you're offshore. Where I think in a harbor, you know, where you're talking 10, 15 feet of water.
More likely to see them on the surface.
More likely to be on the surface, right.
All right. Now, the only thing I'm going to do is if I'm in the harbor, I can use the exact same lures in the harbor and in the Gulf, but kind of to what you said is I'm going to add a bigger lure. I'm going to put, like, something goes down about 15 feet on a heavier rod, and it's a teaser. Now, we sell these bird teasers that splash across the top and help make noise and all that, But I found it's actually better for me with the smaller lures I'm going to use. An aught squid spoon, double aught squid spoon, maybe a one. A lot of small stuff like a storm twitch stick, the small Yozuri crystal minnows, all these lures like that. Any of them. I don't do well with them in the Gulf until I put a bigger lure down below it. Now, that bigger lure might attract a king or could be almost anything, but I'm actually using it to get attention for my smaller lures. I'm using it as more of a teaser, and it's got hooks in it, so I don't mind pulling it. I hate pulling teasers with no hooks. So
why is that?
Well, because I can't catch anything on it. I mean, if I'm going through all the way to putting it out behind the boat, I got all this stuff going on, I'm dragging it across, I want it to actually be productive. When I put teasers out, I throw a hook off the back one. I just add a hook right to it. I mean, because I've had fish come up with my teasers so many times. So I've got on a regular rod and reel the bird teasers, and I put a flat line clip out, which is kind of like a downrigger clip. And matter of fact, same thing. But I just use that to hold it low down to the water so it isn't going up on the rod. I can run my teasers where I want it without having to get them all the way back to make up for the lift in the rod. But I put hooks on my teasers all the time. And that's why I like using those 15. Something goes down 15 to 20 feet. And it doesn't really have to be big or flashy or anything. It's just making noise. Another good one to do is that 1 ounce rattle trap. Nothing makes more noise than a rattle trap. A lot of times I catch fish with it out there, but I catch more Spanish. I catch more of the everything else because blackfin tuna eat the Spanish mackerel lures. King mackerel eat the Spanish mackerel lures. Bonita will eat them.
Cobia.
All these big fish will eat these little tiny lures if they know they're there. But yeah. They got to know they're there. Otherwise.
Yeah. And that makes sense, absolutely.
So with the big lures, it kind of gets beyond the prop noise and the waves and everything, adds that sound chumming to it. It's not like scent chumming where you're putting smell in the water. It's literally vibration sound. They get, and I use mostly the Rapala ones. I've used the Mans, the Stretch 15 and the Stretch 20s. They're pretty good. The Bomber one is okay. My favorite's the Rapala, but it really... kind of personal preference, I guess.
No, I'll agree with you on the Rapala. I mean, the main reason why I like the Rapala is because, one, I have a hard time tuning lures to make them swim properly. Because right. You get a little carried away with turning it one way or the other and end up screwing it up even more. And the Rapala right out of the box, you really almost never have to mess with it. But the main thing I like about it, they've got it so set up with the hydrodynamics on those lures. Like, everyone's used to, like, say, the depth-specific lures of a 30, which in the Mans or the Bomber is a big lure. I mean, it's 12, 13 inches long.
I got to agree. You're on the right track. I'm going to let you finish, but that's absolutely what attracts me to the Rapala over the other brands.
Yeah, it's half the size of the lure and will go down the same depth.
Yeah, I, you know, and I it just get more fish perfect. With it. I they're not trying to eat a whole huge turkey in one bite.
Right.
And some of those lures are monstrous. Now, it's weird with the grouper. I actually prefer some of the bigger body baits if I'm trying to get one real close to the bottom.
Right.
But,
and I could appreciate
and I can
that.
Get that in some of the Rapala, too.
Right.
But for every other fish, that smaller bait seems to work way better.
But the other thing that I've noticed personally with the Rapala depth-specific ones, and have had this reinforced to me from quite a few other people who troll a lot, because of that smaller body is my guess, you've got more room for error with that lure as far as your trolling speed. The Mans and the Bomber will blow out at about 8 miles an hour, 7 miles an hour, where they just don't want to troll at all. They want to turn sideways and come up towards the surface. The Rapala, you can get up to 10, 11 miles an hour with it. So if you want to start to eliminate certain species, like maybe Spanish mackerel, and you want to more or less target a king mackerel, you can boost up your speed. Or if you want to reduce your chance...
Get up around 5 miles an hour. And...
Yeah, you could reduce maybe barracudas that are around some of the ledges that are short bursts but not long bursts, and maybe do it that way. So the diversity or the flexibility of that lure, I just like it a little bit better.
Okay, now, when I used to pull a lot of the man stuff, the stretch 30s, stretch 20s, before a lot of the other companies really started getting into that depth specific, I always put it in the water to see which way it was going to go. Because, like, you're talking about tuning a lure. When a lure is tuned right, T-U-N-E, tuned, it tracks in a straight line. When you're pulling it, it pulls immediately straight. When it's out of tune, it could go to the left or go to the right. And with the mans, I can't get them to straighten out. So what I would do is put them behind the boat, and if it was moving to the left, I would put it on the left side of the boat. If it's tracking to the right, I put it on the right side of the boat to keep it from tangling the other lures. But I would literally have them marked, you know, drifts right or left. And that way I know which side I would put them on. Because if you got mans that's pulling hard left on the right side of the boat, it's going to tangle in your other lures.
Your own custom-made side rigger or outrigger, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the nice part about it is it gets it way out off the side. But so many of the bigger lures are not adjusted properly, and you have to tweak the nose ring where the split ring attaches to, like a 64th of an inch to the opposite way of what it's pulling, and oh my God, tiniest bit too much because it's so thick and they make them so heavy that then it goes the other way. It's right. Better off just to figure out which way it's going to go and put it on that side of the boat. Get it out of the way.
No, it makes sense. You know.
One question. Shrimp right now. We're selling a lot of shrimp.
A whole lot of
I
shrimp.
I mean, the shrimp sales are actually way up. What's going on with the shrimp? I mean, this is the time of year. These are kind of perfect, moderate water temperatures. Usually whitebait is the king. And I would say for snook right now, you're going to catch more snook on whitebait than you will on shrimp. But for every other species, it really seems to be almost a shrimp bite. And
right.
That's weird. It's not that cold yet.
I think what part of it is that we're actually starting to see some of these spring and early summer shrimp are growing faster because of the amount of dead fish that were out along the beaches and stuff like that from the red tide, that we're starting to see a little bit of that bounty from that bad event. You know, because there's always going to be your good and your bad with any of this stuff. And I think with the shrimp, with the sizes that we're seeing and some of the numbers that we're seeing, it's starting to turn all the other fish onto those shrimp. So I think that's why they're kind of switching over into that shrimp feeding
mode. So what you're saying is because they had so much to eat from all the fish that died from the red tide, and shrimp do not die from red tide.
Correct.
So they were eating all the dead fish and everything else that died, got bigger faster, and there's so many more of them out feeding when they probably shouldn't be. The fish are keying in on those as a primary food because it's so abundant.
Well, not only that, but also several months ago, you even made this mention, is that there's less predators around. So there's less predators to feed on those shrimp, so that's why you've also got the better numbers of them, too. Not only do you get the size, but you get the population growth all at the same time. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing.
RJ?
Yeah, I'll go along with all of that. We've had this discussion on air before, that there are some benefits to red tide.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody always wants to say the bad things, bad things, bad things. Sometimes you got to be a little positive. You know, put on the rose-colored glasses. And if all you want to hear is the negative stuff, turn on the evening news. You know, they don't know how to do anything but negativity. But we want to tell you that even sometimes bad things can have at least something good happen with them. You know,
absolutely.
Got to look for the brighter side of life.
And it's part of the recovery process, too. When you have a bad event, and in this case it's red tide, you know, what is the recovery process? What should we expect? And, you know, and how can we adapt to it? That's why our species is still on the planet, because we've learned how to adapt to that stuff.
Well, and there's a lot of species that require some of those destruction things to become more prolific or just to repopulate itself. I mean, look at the hundreds of types of conifers or pine trees throughout the world that rely on fire to germinate. If there's no fire, they won't ever grow from a seedling. They need that fire to burn off their exoskeleton of their shell in order for it to get into the dirt. And that also brings in fertilizers and everything else for that plant to grow. Same thing with shrimp or any other critter for that matter. There are catastrophic events that make something else
grow bigger,
succeed.
All right. We talked about a lot of trout out there, and we're talking about shrimp as a good bait. Is it shrimp on a popping cork, shrimp on a jig head, freelining a shrimp? What's going on with the trout and how you're catching them?
I'm getting a lot of mixed results on that one because, I mean, they're in a little bit deeper water still. They're out there in that 3 to 4 feet of water off the edges of the flats or right at the edges of some of the channels. So most of the guys are either freelining them with a small split shot or using a jig head and just casting it out there and working it. A couple guys are doing okay with bobbers on the flats themselves, but they're picking up more small trout that way.
So you're saying the smaller trout hit the popping corks more?
Well, I think it's because guys don't necessarily know how to adjust their depths with their popping corks. They think that whether they buy one of those pre-made ones, like DOA makes that really nice one that's already rigged with the fake shrimp in it.
Yeah, the deadly combo or something like that.
The leader's only like 24 inches long. And a lot of people are under the assumption because they buy one of those fancy popping corks with the beads on it and the rattles and all that stuff, that they automatically have to use the same length leader that they've always used for all their other stuff. But the idea of a popping cork is to have it to the depth of the water that you're fishing, but keep it just a few inches above the grass or the structure that you might be fishing around. So you might have to use 5 feet of leader if you're in 6 feet of water. Or you might only need 12 inches of leader if you're only fishing in 18 inches of water. These guys don't know necessarily or want to take the time to do that. So I think that's why the guys with the split shots or the jig heads getting it down a little deeper, getting a little bit more productive.
All right, here's the biggest complaint we've got right now, popping corks. People don't like tying on the leader. They want to just put a popping cork on the line, like the old popping corks that have the peg in them, the single peg.
Correct.
If you want those to work, you're going to have to buy one of the oval floats or cigar floats with the two black pegs in it. Those black cone-shaped pegs, the two of them, one goes in the top, one goes in the bottom, they will hold that popping cork on, as long as you don't pop it real hard, on braided line. If you're using the solid one-piece stem peg, they don't stick in the braided line. It won't stay unbraided. It just moves constantly.
Yeah, it wants to slide up and down or
it's going to slide and it's going to come off or whatever, but it's not going to work. But if you take that single peg out and use the black ones from the oval floats or the cigar floats or whatever, the two little black inserts, they work good on the popping corks. I'm taking those out of the regular oval float and putting in that giant teardrop top shape one we've got.
Yeah.
That great big one.
Yeah.
Because if you put the solid peg on it, it won't stay on the line. But if I take that out and put the two little black pegs in, it works awesome. It
right.
stays where it's supposed to stay, braided, mono, whatever, it works. But if I'm using a popping cork with a long, solid green or black stem on it that goes all the way through, it won't stay. So I end up having to make my leader a little bit longer and putting it on the leader itself because it won't stay on the braided.
Right.
So, but I found that by using those black pegs, it turns a popping cork back into a usable bobber again.
Yeah, the other option you have is if you've already got some of those bobbers laying around and you don't want to mess with that, you're going to have to make your leader longer. And the trick that I found personally was just sliding the slit of the bobber up through my braided line and then bringing that bobber down to either my swivel for connecting my two lines together or my line-to-line knot, and hiding that in the center of the float in order to get it to hold still.
Right. In order to get that single peg to hold, I actually have to have part of that peg on the leader.
Yeah.
It won't hold with the braided.
No,
and no matter what I do, I can't get it to stay in the position. And we're hearing about that constantly. Now, for me, I take the popping cork that has the ring on the top, the swivel on the bottom, and that snap.
Yeah,
I cut the snap off and throw it away because that's junk. It's that little safety pin type, and it just pulls apart. But the swivel end on the bottom of that works great. I just tie my leader there, and I just tie the leader whatever length I want it, put my hook on the end and whatever. And the 16th-ounce Rockport Rattler in the pink is still, that's become kind of my favorite under the popping corks. Because the Rockport, you got the popping cork making all that noise, and it's just going pop, pop. And then there's really nothing there. You've got the movement of the shrimp, because every time you pop the cork, it jumps whatever it is on the you have on the end of the line, either the artificial or the live shrimp, makes it look like it's trying to escape. But if you put a Rockport Rattler there, now you've got noise there. You've got the movement, the jump, the escaping stuff, plus it's making noise, and it's just a much happier world. I mean, we got fuzzy bunnies and, you know, rainbows and unicorns down there at that point.
Nice.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, it works. What can I say?
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody love a fuzzy bunny and a rainbow and a unicorn and all that stuff, you know?
If it catches fish, hell yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. If it works, it catches fish, I'm all in. So, popping corks for more trout, free line jig heads for bigger trout.
That's the way it seems to be working, yeah. I mean, all right. From the majority of the people I've been talking to, that's definitely what's been working well.
I think
that
the bigger trout always tend to be a little deeper wherever they happen to be based on the water temperature. You know, at some point the water temperature is cold enough that the big guys are everywhere. But if you're fishing the shallow flats, you're going to get little trout. If you fish the drop-offs in the holes, you're going to get bigger fish because the bigger fish hold in deeper water.
That's why I use the 52 mirror lure. A TT 11, a TT 18, or a 52-11, 52-18, especially the TT 18. It's a green, white belly, silver sides, green back mirror lure. It's got black spots all over it, tiny trout. That's what the TT means. And the 52 is exactly the same thing without the black spots on it. But it falls about a foot a second in salt water. So if I've got 3.5 feet of water on the flats and I'm catching a lot of little trout, I'll throw the mirror lure out, count 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and then I start to work the lure, and it brings me along under, closer to the bottom, and I'm working it slower. I don't want to catch the attention of those smaller trout. Twitch, twitch, stop, twitch, stop, twitch, twitch, stop. And I get bigger trout with that. Where if I throw the MR-17, I got every trout in the area going after it. And so I go through a lot more smaller ones. Now, I don't catch as many fish doing that, but I catch bigger fish. I wonder what would happen if I threw a purple one down there.
Well, there you go. That's something to try.
Because they got a PD, a purple demon. And that might be the answer. Instead of using the 52 PD, the purple one, bigger fish, work it slower, get it down below the school of trout. I don't know why. In 30 years, I've been throwing that TT-18. I've never thought about switching to the purple because I was trying for bigger trout, and that's how I've done it. And then I'm talking earlier about bigger trout on purple. What an idiot. Took me 30 years to think of this? 35 years?
You heard it first here on Community Radio.
And
KDW.
And I might even catch up to it. It only takes, I'm slow, but I get there, boys and girls. 30, 40 years of doing this, yeah, and I finally think, okay, use a 52 PD. Oh, my God.
He's like an Uber driver on St. Patrick's Eve.
Uber driver on St. Patrick's Eve?
Yeah, he eventually gets there, but not quickly.
Nice.
Now, I don't know if I even want to know why St. Patrick's Eve, the Uber driver, goes slow. But there's got to be something there. All right. Let's see. We got a couple minutes left. Rat reds.
Been a lot of those around lately.
Rat reds are just smaller size redfish. Anything under the 18-inch slot limit is considered a rat red. And the reason they call them that, rats are usually smaller, and it rhymes with reds. So, rat reds, what's the best way to catch those?
I try to avoid catching them personally. You know, so you are finding them on the flats mixed in with those snook up along the bushes and in some of the creeks and stuff like that. It's been pretty pretty unusual for this time of year, because usually, not in the last 5 years, but the last 30 years, January and February is usually what they call rat red season.
Going to cover your butt there very nicely, sir. I mean, yeah. you could have got Pampers would have been proud of you.
You know, there's just been a lot of them around, so usually, I mean, I'll personally try to avoid catching them because they're usually in little schools, and they get that gang mentality, and when the food shows up, they want to get that food first, so it doesn't matter if he's 10 inches long or 16 inches long, and it doesn't matter if that shrimp is 2 inches long or 8 inches long. They inhale it all the way down into their stomach.
It's the only creature I've ever seen that can bite, chew, swallow, and try and poop it out all in the first half a second.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally going right in one end all the way down into its gullet. It's the only time when I'm, at this time of year, I always want to have a box of tournament circle hooks.
I agree.
I hate circle hooks. I just detest them. But in this one instance, the other thing I'll do is use the wide gap hooks, the kale hooks, because I like setting a hook on my fish.
Right.
And so I want one of those. To be quite honest, I'll prefer the Kaylee, but a wide or a circle hook, tournament style, inline style, with a piece of frozen shrimp meat on it is an ideal way if you want to go in there and have fun playing with those redfish. Can't set the hook. They're going to pull away, and that way it'll hook up in the corner of mouth. It's a booger to get the circle hook out of those fish. That's why I usually go to the Kaylee hook, because I can set the hook and keep it hooking in the corner of the mouth. But piece of frozen shrimp meat, and they just love it. Or dead shrimp meat. You know, just you don't need live shrimp for them. And, in fact, I catch more on dead bait than I do on live bait with the small redfish.
No, and I'll agree with that. I even catch a lot of them on, like, the fish bites or even some of the gulp or any of the other scented soft plastics for that matter. But I agree with you with the circle hook because I've foul hooked way too many of those fish over the years, or just I don't like doing it. You know, they just...
I put on a slip sinker. I take about a quarter-ounce sinker. I put it on my line. I tie my line to a swivel. I put my hook about 18 inches, 2 feet away from the swivel. I got the sliding sinker on. I've got about a 1/0 to, usually around a 1/0 circle hook on there. I put on as much of a piece of frozen shrimp as I can get, toss it over where I see the school, and I want that slip sinker because these little guys are going to feed on the bottom. They don't like coming up for bait. They like grubbing the bottom for it, and with that sliding sinker, I can immediately feel that tap and start to reel up on them, and it seems to go really good.
Yeah, and as far as the circle hooks go, I'm going to use either the Owner or the VMC because those two, you know, in those sizes, like a 1 or a 1/0, are very similar in size to a J hook versus all of your other circle hooks are very confusing and frustrating.
Yeah,
to
you got
to
kind of look at them. Look at a normal 1/0 and see what the size is supposed to be, and then hold it up by your circle hook, see which one you want to get. Right now, this week, today, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, we're going to be at the Fort Myers Boat Show. We got seminars going all day. Every hour on the hour, we got fishing seminars, all different types of topics. That's at the biggest boat show, the baddest boat show. We've done a lot of boat shows. There is nothing like this one. It is huge. Dozens, if not hundreds, of vendors and boats everywhere. It's an awesome place. You can even get food and drink there. RJ in the control booth. Say goodbye, RJ.
Bye, RJ.
Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Fish and Frank, we gone.
I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, fish.